Hello, and welcome to this edition of Radio Free HPC. This is where we talk about supercomputing, high-performance computing, and other technology topics. I'm your Toastmaster, Rich Breckner, with my co-hosts, Dan Olds and Shaheen Khan from OrionX, and Henry Newman from Seagate Government Solutions. Now, let's get to the show. All right, we're back with Radio Free HPC. We've got the full crew here today with Dan Olds, Shaheen Khan, and Henry Newman. Guys, welcome back. Well, you know, it's been kind of a slow week here. We've been kind of scratching our heads. What's really the big thing this week? You know,
late summer week before Labor Day, you'd think everybody'd want to go out with their announcements and do stuff, don't you? Wouldn't you?
Well, there were a couple, but they're kind of minor. You know, University of Southern Mississippi put in a cluster, and D-Wave landed an upgraded machine, but nothing real earth-shaking, Dan.
Yeah, it's kind of like that week before Christmas, after Christmas, before New Year's.
Yeah. Well, while I was looking for news, I did see that you presented in Perth, Dan, about HPC interconnects. I thought that might be a good topic today.
You know, the other topic, too, is Perth is a lot farther away than anybody knows.
Further away from where?
You look on that map, and I flew from Portland to Vancouver, BC, to Brisbane, and then it's another more than 6 hours from Brisbane over to Perth. No one knew Australia was that big. No one told me, at least. You did?
I did.
Well, they're all jammed up in the bottom left-hand corner of your Mercator projection.
All the great white attacks, or most of them, are in Perth, so I knew there was the other side.
Ah. And they're getting their weather straight from Antarctica, which was a little stormy.
Well, that's right. It was winter down there, wasn't it, when you were...
Yes, it was. Yeah. Yes, it was. There were a couple of pairs of shorts that went unused because I did not have the foresight to think of that.
Well, you made it down there. You had a two-day conference with HPC Advisory Council, and then...
It was good.
It was good. And your presentation, what was that, the second day?
Mm-hmm.
What did you talk about, Dan? What was the
gist? A market that we sort of established at Orion, strictly looking at high-performance interconnects. We see that as a discrete, separate market from supercomputers as a whole.
So, okay, what comprises this market then? InfiniBand, for sure. What else are you including?
Yeah, it's...
Basically ends up being the upper half of the top 500.
Yeah, essentially. Hmm. Okay. When you start to get to multi-rack, that's where you're going to put in an HPI. Essentially, we're talking about 3.5 different products.
Okay.
You've got the specialized stuff, and that's your Aries and Gemini interconnects from Cray. Mm-hmm. It's your specialized interconnects from IBM and others.
Uh-huh.
Then you have InfiniBand.
Yeah.
And then you have OPA, which is Intel's Omnipath architecture.
Yeah.
And then you got the half is Ethernet.
Oh.
Because Ethernet used to be a lot of them, but Ethernet isn't very many of them now. In fact, I don't think Ethernet is in the top, it's barely in the top 100 systems. That there's
Dan, I have two questions.
What's that?
Only two. Question one is the Ethernet, or did anybody talk about RoCE 2 or RoCE, which is RDMA Ethernet? And is that, do you think that's going to have an impact? And the second question deals with the long-term viability of all the markets that we're in. Where does data analytics, what are their requirements for interconnects? Do you have any ideas?
Well, actually, yeah. Let me take the second question first, and then I'll forget the first question. But no, first question.
I won't let you, Dan.
The answer is, people were talking about RoCE, and it was in use. But I don't believe that RoCE gets you around the basic problem with Ethernet, is that the latency is too high.
Ethernet is a wire. I mean, if you go down to the lowest level of the protocol, a wire is a wire. Now, I can believe performance, but I don't buy latency if you're running an RDMA protocol.
But it's also the protocol, right? I mean, there was a joke back then.
The protocol is what gets in the way.
I understand, but that's what
causes the latency.
Yeah, agreed. It's not the physical layer. It's the protocol layer. But what Rocky was, as it was supposedly pitched, was supposed to near equal the performance of other RDMA protocols. And I'm asking, were any tests shown? Do you have any data? Where is Rocky in the performance continuum versus Ethernet? Now, obviously, Ethernet has routing, so you got some overhead there. It's so different than other protocols. But I'm just wondering what you saw.
They didn't really go into that. There wasn't a presentation on Ethernet versus Ethernet Rocky versus anything else, and I didn't drill down deep into it. But the lowest latency I've seen with Rocky under test conditions is like 1.3 microseconds. Yeah. Whereas you're talking, 90 nanoseconds or so for InfiniBand and OPA.
Got it.
So that's pretty big difference.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting to note that in the latest top 500, the biggest Ethernet vendor was actually Mellanox, because their SwitchX technology does both InfiniBand and Ethernet. So they're doing 200 gig Ethernet systems.
Oh, they're doing 200 gig Ethernet now?
Yes. Their switch can do both.
It's the same parts, right?
Yeah, it's the same physical device, right? And wires and such. So, yeah.
So that's it, Rich. There is a high end to Ethernet.
Yeah.
Because Ethernet comes in so many different varieties.
Yeah.
And for some customers, just the fastest Ethernet they can get will do. Whereas others really need something more, and they need something more now. And then InfiniBand, Omnipath, Specialized, and then at some point maybe PCI-based networking will come clearly above.
Yeah, but they've been trying for PCI networking for, what, a decade?
Well, PCI is reputed to be a difficult protocol to play with as an engineer. Can be a little temperamental and such, but it is faster. And if you can make it work and abstract it with the protocol on top, then it can be a contender, and there are people working on that. Back to Henry, your point about speed. Because Rocky runs on top of Ethernet, it uses different algorithms for lossless transmission, for flow control, congestion control, all of those. And as a result, there are people who believe that it will never be as fast as InfiniBand.
Oh, and I don't think it'll be as fast, but if you know what. The question is, everybody's got Ethernet. Will it get near the speed? What percentage? Is it 95%? And that'll cover a lot of people?
Is that good enough?
Or is it 70% or 60%, and that's not good enough? What is good enough? So that's my question. And with regard to PCI, I'm not convinced that we're going to, it could be, but I'm not convinced, because as Dan said, I think, people going at PCI as an interconnect for quite a while, and it really just hasn't taken off.
And PCI per slot is about 35 gigabytes per second, right? 200 gigabit Ethernet, 200 gigabit InfiniBand, ain't that far off?
Well, it depends on your chipset, Dan, because it's not per slot, it's per chip, and then they divide it up into lanes on the chip, and then the slots have performance. So it depends, I guess what I would say. You can't, I don't think I would agree with that statement wholly.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that you're looking at are different potential routes for an interconnect, like IBM's CAPI. I'm not sure if it's faster than PCI, but it's pretty fast. Mm-hmm. NVLink definitely is faster than PCI.
Right.
It's more than that. It's about 8x now. It's 300 gigabytes per second.
And but you've got to.
CAPI would be too.
faster than PCI. You have over 40 lanes of PCI Express on a chip. So 40 times 8 is over 300 gigabits a second. So it really depends on how you're measuring it.
Yeah. And,
okay, so it's not, you can't look at slots anymore, Dan. You have to look at what
lanes.
Well, you also have to look at, you know, the what's available and what you're using and how it's architected.
Mm-hmm.
So,
no, that makes sense. That makes sense. We don't really have a PCIe contender at this point to talk about.
Well, PLX was PLX technology was doing the chipsets and parts and maybe even a switch, I forget. And then they got acquired by Avago.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kind of lost track of that. But I don't think it's gone away. I'm pretty sure people are working on it because
it's a logical thing to work on.
Definitely. And if you look at the whole hierarchy of interconnects from QPI or whatever replaced it at the CPU level and equivalent, and then go all the way down to Ethernet, there's definitely a stratification that is happening. Now, if you can eliminate a couple of layers with a new technology, that can really help. But in the meantime, there's definitely a high-end interconnect market segment.
Yes.
Well, and I'd like to just point out that economics really plays a big part here for HPC because these, you know, when you have these large clusters, the cost of the interconnect can approach, 30, maybe more percent of the cluster, right?
And it's a little bit, that's a little propaganda.
Well,
a little bit from the, from what I hear, it's more like 20%.
All right, but even at 20%.
Even at 20%.
I go back to my.
Well, if you're gonna pick an interconnect, right?
Yeah.
Not just on performance, but cost. The highest end of Ethernet is very expensive for like 3 years, just like it is for InfiniBand. But that drives the choice as much as anything. You know,
exactly.
You'd love to build it all with 400 gig Ethernet from Mellanox, the whole cluster, but it wouldn't make economic sense.
Well, and I go back to my economics. I mean, we in HPC aren't driving the market in many respects anymore at the high end, and it's the data analysis people. So my economics question goes back to what do they require? Because in some ways, I think, you know, as we move forward for processors and communications, that's going to be the market driver, not us.
It's interesting that we, Shaheen and I, just finished doing a big survey of over 300 folks out there that are deep in AI.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I mean, it's humbly, I would say it's the most comprehensive survey into AI ever, at least to date. And one of the questions we asked them is, what are you using for interconnects?
Mm-hmm.
And the majority, I want to say that this was probably, let's say, 50%, 40%, 30%, with 30% saying InfiniBand, 40% saying, I think it was 10 gig Ethernet, Shaheen, and then the others saying the fastest Ethernet we can get our hands on. Or no, the 40% were the people saying, you know, just the Ethernet we have.
Yeah.
And then about 50% saying the fastest Ethernet we can get our hands on.
Yep.
So that's a little bit of a data point for you there.
I think that's an important data point for this discussion as we, you know, in our industry.
Yes, yes.
We allowed to see this study, Dan, or is this paid for by a customer?
No, we're allowed to see it, yeah.
Well, I think we should put it up.
Well, you're allowed to see some of it. I mean, how are we going to put bread on our tables, Henry?
Oh, you're selling this. You're selling this as a report.
Oh, you're selling it. Oh, selling it as a report. Because I was going to offer to buy you one beer, Dan, at happy hour.
An impressive offer
for months of work.
Considering it, yes. About 6 weeks.
You drink cans, don't you? In the can.
If I don't have the budget for Bud Light, yeah.
For Dan, for the resale rights, I will offer you a 6-pack of beer. How about that?
Oh, is this a bidding war? Are you bidding against me?
Wow. I told you this was a good thing to do, Shaheen.
Well, hey, it got you approved as a vendor with Henry.
Yeah, exactly. Well, one of the big battles, getting back into control of this, as I should be, one of the big battles that I talked about was onload versus offload.
Oh.
And that's a...
That's a holy war.
That's a holy war, and it's going to get holier.
Yeah.
So take us a bit through that. Just what is the difference between it?
Well, there's two different ways to do network processing. There's things that have to happen, right? When you're mm-hmm. sending out a message, you've got the link layer, which does the packet layout, packet forwarding, flow control, data integrity, that sort of stuff. You've got the network layer that adds a header, does the routing of packets, transport layer, which ensures in-order packet delivery, divides the data up, the receiver assembles it, sends and receives acknowledgments. Those are all the things that have to happen with every message that goes out. Then you add on top of that the MPI operations, like scatter, gather, broadcast, and the various permutations. This stuff somebody has to process this within a system.
Okay. And somebody has to know the locations for gather, scatter versus node to node. And I would suspect that,
here's your guess.
Yeah, you tell me if I'm wrong, that different operations perform better or worse on different implementations, whether it's onload or offload, at a different size systems, because you can store more information in certain routes. You know, if you've got a million nodes versus 100 nodes and systems, that would be my guess.
Yeah,
it will vary with the number of nodes that you have, your performance. With what I've seen evidence-wise, typically, well, let me go back and explain what onload and offload are. Okay. So I talked about all the things that had to happen.
Yeah.
And on onload, the CPU handles that. So your main CPU handles all that networky stuff. And examples of that would be like Unix systems, right? PC servers, that sort of thing. The CPU handles all that, takes interrupts for it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. On offload, you have a smart adapter card that has a very fast ASIC in it that handles all of those tasks. That's mm-hmm. offload. Mm-hmm. An example of that would be like the mainframe. Mainframe has assist processors.
Channel.
The channel processors. And there's some evidence out there that on onload, the more messages you're sending, and depending on the message size, and particularly when you're talking about lots and lots of nodes, that you're losing, you know, as much as 2/3 of your CPU power just to handling all the messaging. Hmm. Whereas with offload, you're not.
Well, the question is, would your CPUs be waiting anyway so it doesn't matter? That's one question.
That's one point.
Exactly.
Yeah. So there's so many issues here with asynchronous versus synchronous communication, the size of the nodes and routing tables. You know, this will continue to be holy wars, and everybody's going, I guess as an ex-benchmarker, I would ask a lot of questions of looking at data compared to the two.
Let's not forget the applications that you're actually running. That's going to make a big difference.
That's what I mean. Some people, you know, you're going to throw something out, you can wait for it, you can do other work, and other things, you've got to be synchronous, you know. Yeah. So there's a lot of variables here.
Regardless of async or versus sync, you still want to get the communications done as quickly as possible.
Not necessarily. If you can, in your programming, if you've got enough time between your work and your communications, you can have a separate buffer area for the communications to happen. Then you just change memory pointers and go grab the data. So
that's
insanity,
Henry.
No, sometimes that makes sense. But Henry, when you come back to the onload, offload, our view is that in most HPC situations, you don't have spare CPU capacity anyway, and that it actually does help you for the network to do the stuff that it can, and it's just kind of incremental benefit to you. Now, you could argue that, I could buy a cheaper network and just buy a few more CPUs.
Yeah.
and you can do that. But reality is that the more CPU you add, the more they're going to get sucked up by the apps that are running. Now, if you do have a spare capacity, then you're right. Then you might as well serverize the network and let the server do the job that network would have done. So I think that is kind of the analysis.
But Shaheen, I guess I would say when you're doing communication, you're in user land burning CPU. And if you're doing synchronous, you're in user land burning CPU. So unless you know what you're really burning CPU on, and if it's communications, you know, you're taking a broad stroke, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, how busy are these all these cores you got? You got these 28 core Xeons, right? I mean, are they all just totally busy the whole time with the
If you're doing your HPC right, they are. If you're doing your HPC right, you should have that. I mean, this is perfect world.
Yeah.
But your final hurdle should be memory bandwidth.
Well, but Dan, I guess I would say, and Rich's comment is, people have gone, you know, how many of these codes are 25 or 30 years old that we're still running? And we've gone, even at 15 years ago, we went from two or four cores, and now we're at 28. Doing your HPC right is an expensive avenue in terms of your code rewrite and the amount of work you've got to do to get to, quote, doing it right. And
But by the way, those cores are slower.
I understand, but in all fairness to applications that are multi-million line applications, you're making it seem quite simple when this is a really hard problem.
Small matter of programming, Henry, right?
as you would say, a simple matter of programming.
Simple matter of programming, yes.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Rich,
but hey, Henry,
again, I'll disagree with Dan.
If you're in the mood, we have like a half, you know, few, at least four or five papers on this topic on orionx.net/research.
Okay.
They're available for the taking. You don't have to register or anything. But, you know, we don't like to do those.
Did Dan write them or did you write them, Shaheen?
We had like four.
I wrote the best one.
We had. No, we had four or five people who wrote them, and Dan was part of the team. And yes, if you see a especially good paragraph, it was probably Dan.
Yeah. Okay. I figured it was you, Shaheen, that was especially good.
All right. Well, we can point to that stuff. But
all right.
And Dan, your talk as well. We'll get that up here.
I appreciate it.
So catches of the week, gentlemen.
Oh, gosh.
I got one.
Who's got one? Dan?
I got one.
What do you got?
A story that came out in McClatchy. Could someone hack your pacemaker? FDA is recalling 465,000 of them because of that risk.
Wow. They recall?
Oh, wow.
So what do you just mail it back to the factory?
You mail it back to them. It's a temporary one. It's just like your Apple Store experience,
yeah,
Rich.
Okay. Oh, yeah, you go
down
to the
Genius Bar, and they yank it out, and they set you up with a car battery on a timer keep you going.
No spares, though. They don't do spares. So.
No, there's no hot sparing out there. But here's the thing, the little note at the end of the story that shocked me. Listen to this, quote, In 2012, a former hacker named Martaby Jack proved he could reverse engineer a pacemaker, forcing it to release multiple 830-volt shocks.
Oh, my God.
According to Engadget.
You know what? You don't get to have multiples, Dan, probably. If you got a heart problem, one's good enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just better hope you're holding a light bulb when you let that go.
Yeah, you better be grounded somewhere.
Be seriously grounded. But 465,000 folks the United States are at risk.
Are these things like connected to the internet or something?
Some of them do send data back.
Wow. What they need is a firmware patch. I'm not going to tell you where they plug in the USB. But I'm assuming that they've got a way to firmware this thing, hopefully wirelessly.
Maybe it's Bluetooth. You just have to get close and pair up, right?
Well, this includes the RF telemetry versions of these devices, so these things are wireless.
But you know, in all seriousness, secure connectivity.
Yeah.
Among other things, secure data, secure connectivity, secure everything is just becoming a non-negotiable in IoT. He just, I, you know, he can't. Spend, he
and
can't
that's spend, yeah. that, that's what I said a couple weeks ago at the NIST Rev 5 standards.
You know, I do want us to go through that. Maybe we should do that next time around. That's a really.
I have to finish reading it, and I got to make my comments by week after next. So that I will be done
fresh.
By next
okay.
week. I will be done by next week.
You know, in general, you've been raising the point of supply chain security, and that's a really big deal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But this is also really locked in a choice that I've told my wife about, that if I ever do have heart problems, and I'm probably gonna, that rather than have a pacemaker installed or something like that, I want two monkey hearts. I want N plus one monkey hearts or pig hearts, whatever they have. But I want the N plus one.
How about a human heart, Dan? Oh, wait, we wouldn't want to do that with Dan.
I'm not so sure I would buy into a human heart.
All right.
It's only one. It's not, I can't get the redundancy.
All right, well, it's
anyway,
a 20-year-old. All right, so my catch is something I caught on the register, which is another BGP blunder. And we've had a couple of those that took out the country of Japan, the whole country.
Ooh.
Yeah.
What they do?
What happened?
Somebody fat fingered, which in a border gateway protocol, and kind of, I won't say whom, but it was on the register on the 27th of August. And when this is not the first time countries have been taken out by a BGP blunder.
How long were they down?
Needs to be a simulator for BGP, so that we do not take countries off the internet.
How long were they down?
Not a long time.
You want to say what BGP is?
Border Gateway Protocol.
Ah.
Oh, jeez.
So it's part of how systems find each other.
Yeah, and it's one of the lower level. It's one of the lower level parts of it. But this goes back to. I don't think IP, as it was designed in the early 70s, late 60s, was kind of up to the task for this. And we've been, and there needs to be some kind of simulator. So if you change a router, that you would simulate what you've done and see what the activity is.
Wait, you're saying something more than, are you sure? Why enter?
No, something more than enter. So
I got one. Amazon bought Whole Foods this past week. The deal closed.
I heard about that.
And everybody's really thinking about what the impact of Amazon is on Whole Foods. We were talking about what the impact of Whole Foods can be on Amazon. So, you know, my immediate thought was that I can't wait for locally sourced, small batched, cage-free, unprocessed, organic computing.
So you think they might put AWS in the store?
Well, they already are selling Alexas.
Yeah, the Echo.
I went to Whole Foods because it's the closest store to me, and I needed just two little things. And I went there 2 hours after the transaction, you know, was official, and it was prices were down, and they were selling AWS devices in that day.
Wow. So supposedly prices are down. I've read figures either 39% to 40-some% across the board on average.
Yep. Wow. I got the two things I needed, a red pepper and a cucumber.
Yeah, I went to the one in Palo Alto, and I frankly didn't detect any price change. So I don't know what they're talking about.
Why change it for Palo Alto?
It was like on kale and stuff like that, Shaheen. So maybe you don't you don't go in that aisle. Like I don't go near that stuff.
The organic kale, Rich, by the way.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Is there any other? Yeah.
Well, I'd like to see a kiosk there where you can run your AWS microservices while you're there.
Well, I thought an interesting reaction was that supposedly Target, which runs a lot of its IT on AWS, is pretty miffed about this development because they do groceries and they're pulling out.
They're going to go somewhere else for their cloud. Did you hear that Walmart, I heard a rumor that, I think I read it somewhere, Walmart and Google are teaming up together.
That's true. They are.
So this is a huge thing in the industry, I think.
Unexpected development, I would say. You know.
And Amazon, from what I've read, they don't need to make any money on this. They're fine with whatever grocery margins are today.
Yeah. I mean, well, they already, you can get a lot of groceries delivered through Amazon.
But, you know, the counter argument to that is that this also
this also proves, for those who think that way, for them it proves that you need to have brick and mortar to actually be profitable. That that digital only doesn't work for physical goods.
I would not be surprised in the next 12 to 18 months that we see other things in Whole Foods that include electronics and others in Whole Foods as display items.
And books.
At Amazon prices?
Well, certainly.
On Amazon selling so that you can look at a TV before you buy it and just have it delivered to your house.
Yeah. Well, certainly you could pick up there. They would ship there. You pick up there at a lower cost.
Oh, sure.
So it's the last mile thing, too.
Yeah.
Yep. You're not going to. Yeah. So, and, you know, those kinds of things. I would not be surized.
Well, I don't know.
I like to look at picture quality before I buy things, whether it's a video. Those are the kinds of things that don't take up a lot of room. They're thin. I would think that's coming, guys. Yeah. That's my prediction.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I got one. Something. We're all headed for SC17 in Denver this year, and we had a story this week about bringing your kids to SC17. They're going to have a daycare once again for children between 6 months and 12 years of age.
I'm actually going to be running it, Rich.
Are you now? Well, that's a frightening thought.
You got a pipeline from the daycare to the student cluster challenge.
Dan, I would wonder.
I've got a 10x10 I'm going to use.
Yeah. Are you insured, Dan? Yeah. Bonded?
Well, I mean, one of the things I'm going to do is show them what goes on in supercomputing.
You're going to have field trips.
Well, have them do some text parsing for me. And some picture parsing. I'm going to see how they can do versus a machine learning program on identifying pictures.
I think child labor laws are still in effect, Dan, in Denver. So
not for experimental purposes. Pretty sure that's still okay.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
All right, guys.
Have a good weekend.
It's great doing that.
Well, so on that childish note, we will call it quits for this edition of Radio Free HPC. Thanks for listening, and listen again next week.
That's it for this edition of Radio Free HPC. Thank you for listening, and be sure to check back often for new episodes. Also, check out our website for more content, links, and a place for you to let us know what you think about the show. We're at RadioFreeHPC.com. Thanks again. We'll be back with another exciting episode real soon.